Miss my introduction. That's the benefit, Baruch Hashem. I hope you mentioned the important point.
I think so.
Rabbi Teretz will take him.
What?
Okay, Baruch Hashem. Can I have a volunteer?
Sure.
You might want to delegate. Okay. Good morning, everybody. I assume that at some point this morning or last night we've heard about some of the recent history of Yerushalayim in the last, 46 years. I want to take a bit of a different, thank you so much, approach now and go back to the ancient history of Yerushalayim. Not just ancient history of Yerushalayim like we imagine David HaMelech, Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni, but go back to the roots. I want to start with the first place Yerushalayim is mentioned in Tanakh. Now, whoever already looked at the sheet is puzzled. Who can tell me the first place Yerushalayim is mentioned in Tanakh? Anyone? First place Yerushalayim is mentioned.
The word Yerushalayim or the city?
The city. Might not be the word.
It's Yerushalayim.
Exactly. Malki, very good. Who said that? Raise your hand. Whoever it was, good work. Good, Vikias. Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem. Go to Mukkar number one. The story of Abraham, right? There was the war. How many kings against how many kings?
Four and five.
Who won?
Four.
The four kings won. And then who beat the four kings?
Abraham.
Abraham. Excellent. Okay. You all passed the seminary entrance exam. Now, what happened after that? Number one, Vayitze Melech Sodom Likrato Acharei Shivo Meyakotet Kedar La'omei V'tam Lechim Asherito El Emek Shaveihu Emek HaMelech. Melech Sodom, the king of Sodom, came out to greet Abraham after he killed Kedar La'omer, or rather he beat Kedar La'omer and the other kings were with him, to a certain place, Emek Shaveihu Shaveihu Emek HaMelech. Umalki Tzedek Melech Shalem Hotzi Lechem Hayayin. Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem, brought out bread and wine, meaning food and drink, because Avram and his soldiers were very weary from the Melchama. And he was a priest of the highest God, meaning he was a priest of Hashem, he was a frum guy, and what did he do? He brought out refreshments for Avraham and his travelers. Anyone know what mitzvah we would call that if there are weary people on the road to bring them refreshments? Hachnasas Orchim, right? He did Hachnasas Orchim just like Avraham. Malki Tzedek did Hachnasas Orchim. He seemed to be some real ally of Avram. He was a Kohen to the highest God. Sounds like it matches Avram. He did Hachnasas Orchim. How do we know Shalem means Yerushalayim? Maybe it's a different city. Maybe it's like where they had the witch trials in Massachusetts. How do we know it means Yerushalayim? What? So here's a little secret. The secret is, what's the best way to get pshat in Chumash? There's one book, it's a little secret, which is one of the most important mefarshim on Chumash. It's called Nach. Very often, the way to get pshat in something in Chumash, we'll see an even better example in a few moments, is to look in the rest of the Tanakh and see what it says. But the truth is, Chumash is the best mefarish on Chumash. Second best is Nach. What it say in Mukkar 2, of Pasuk in Tehillim, Vayhi v'shalem sukho onato b'tzion, referring to Hashem. What is the sukkah and the mo'ona referring to? The Beit HaMikdash, right? Hashem's mikdash, Hashem's tent, was in Shalem and in Tzion. Shalem and Tzion are synonyms for Yerushalayim. We see that Shalem, it doesn't just happen to have the same letters, right? We know in Tanakh, Yerushalayim doesn't have a Yud in the second to last letter. It's just Yud, Reish, Vav, Shin, Lamed, Mem. Some of the current Sidurim have it that way, right? Or Chumashim. So Shalem is Yerushalayim. It's Mefurish Pasuk in Tehillim. Malki Tzedek, the king of Yerushalayim. What did Yerushalayim mean? The first place we see Yerushalayim in the whole Tanakh, in the whole history of the world, at least Torah Shebachsav, right? The Medrash has earlier things. First place we see Yerushalayim Tanakh is that there's a king of Yerushalayim and he does Hachnosas Orchid. And does his name seem to fit or not? What's his name? Malki Tzedek, the king of Tzedakah, of Tzedek, right? Of righteousness. He's the king of Tzedek. So something, it's very fascinating, maybe we'll try to discover a little bit what this something is, but obviously there's some spiritual power there, something unique about Yerushalayim. The first thing we see, the second thing we see is going to be Akedas Yitzchak. That we're not going to get to today. That'll have to be for next time. The first thing we see is not Akedis Yitzhak, which is the greatest Bein Adam Lamakom, but Hachnosot Orchim, which is the greatest Bein Adam, one of the greatest Bein Adam L'Chaviro, that there's a place of Tzedek, which does Hachnosot Orchim. We see actually that it's not just a one-time occurrence. Apparently it was an ancient Mesorah of Yerushalayim, that Yerushalayim was an Ir HaTzedek, it was a place of Bein Adam L'Chaviro, a place of righteousness, of fairness, of justice, of kindness, from the Pasuk in Yoshua. Now again, the Pasuk in Yoshua, the politics changed a little. Now Yerushalayim, in Sefer Yoshua, Yerushalayim is not an ally anymore, like in the days of Avraham Avinu. Yerushalayim is one of the enemy cities. But what's the king called? Number three, Vayhi Chishma Adoni Tzedek Melech Yerushalayim Ki Lachad Yoshua Ta'ai Vayachri Maka Asher Asali Vichol Maka Ken Asala Ayla Maka Vichy Yishlim Yoshe Givonet Et Yisrael Vayayu Bekervam. Okay, the story's not important for us right now. But who is the king of Yerushalayim in the days of Yoshua? Adoni Tzedek. An Adon is the same as a Melech, right? Adoni Tzedek is just another form of Malki Tzedek. So in those, it's a long time between Avraham and Yoshua, quite a couple hundred years. In those couple hundred years, the nickname of the king of Yerushalayim changed a little. It went from king to lord, right? From Malki to Adoni. But it was still Tzedek. They had this same Masorah that Yerushalayim was a place of Tzedek. Now Adoni Tzedek wasn't so happy with Yoshua because he heard that he conquered the Ai and conquered Yericho, and then, okay, we don't read all these psukim, but in Gimel again we see, Vayishlach Adoni Tzedek, Melech Yerushalayim, El Hoham, Melech Hebron, V'el Param, Melech Yarmut, V'el Yafia, Melech Lachish, V'el Vir, Melech Eglon, Leymar, right? He sent around to all the other kings, and that was the battle of Yoshua against the southern kings, led by Adoni Tzedek. But Yerushalayim somehow has this Mesorah of Tzedek. Go back to number one. Why is it important that Malki Tzedek be mentioned in this parsha? Story of Avram, right? What was it? Stone. Who connected Avram to stone? Anyone remember?
Lot,
right? So Avram's connected to stone. Stone gets conquered by four kings, a whole war. Avram goes and saves his nephew, etc. What is Malki Tzedek doing there? So the Or HaChaim, if you look in the Makor Kedolot there, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says Malki Tzedek's main role from a literary perspective, like what we're supposed to learn from Malki Tzedek in this story, because he doesn't seem to be an important part of the story. He blesses Avraham, okay, fine. But like he doesn't really add to the plot line, is a contrast. What is Yerushalayim contrasted with? What's the contrast to Yerushalayim?
Stone.
The contrast to Yerushalayim is stone. Why is stone the contrast to Yerushalayim? What did they not do in stone? Hachnasat Orchim. Right, this is all. I apologize for asking kindergarten questions. We'll try to get a little more advanced in a few moments. What did Stone? Everyone knows Stone. They didn't do Hachnasat Orchim. Stone was the opposite of Tzedek. Right? In Stone, we all know the Midrashim. Right? I don't know if these are literally the way it happened, but it's certainly the idea of how it happened. Right? If poor people came, they would let them die of hunger, and even if they gave tzedakah, right, each guy would write his name on a coin and give it to him, and there's a law that the grocery stores couldn't sell food to strangers, so the guy wouldn't be able to buy food, he would die of hunger, and they would all take their coins back, right? They were very selfish people in Sodom who didn't care about poor and strangers. How do we know that? How do we know that? No looking allowed. How do we know that what was so bad about Sodom, right? You all know from kindergarten. Did they worship Avodah Zarah worse than anyone else? Did anyone learn in kindergarten in Stone? They worshiped more idols than in other cities. We never learned that, right? In Stone, what, did they treif them at Chol Shabbos? No, we know what they did. They were mean to strangers and poor people. So how do we know that? We know that because it says in Chazal. Okay, wonderful. I'm an Orthodox Jew. Whatever it says in Chazal is fine with me. But how did Chazal know that? What? Which psukim? What did it say in the psukim that says that was the Avir of Stone? He says, why does God want to destroy Stone? Is it okay if I quote Baal Peh? Right? Vayomer Hashem, Zakat Stone Vamarak Ki Rabba, Vechatatam Ki Gadla Ma'od. What does Hashem say to Avram? The cry from Stone and Amor is great, and their sin is exceedingly heavy. Erdanav Ereakat Zakat Haba'ilai Asu Kala. I'll go down and check if, in accordance with the complaint that comes before me, is what they did, I'll destroy them. If be a lonely don. If not, I'll know what to do. That's what Hashem says to Avram. I'll go check Sodom because it's a tremendous outcry and tremendous sin. He doesn't say what the sin is. How do we know what the sin of Sodom was? Anyone? How do we know? How did Chazal know what the sin of Sodom was? It's a medrash. The medrash says, you want me to give you a million stories to Chazar kindergarten? Right, there is the story I said about the poor people. There's the story about, right, the girl who went to, like, right, the Rashi quotes, who was, they killed with a mitam shuna, that there was a family that was very poor, but no one would give them tzedakah because they were all stonics. So there was one girl who was nice, who didn't fit into Sodom. Right, so what did she do? She wasn't allowed to give tzedakah. She would go down to get water from the well. She would fill her bucket with food, right, with flour, every day, go down to the well, sneak it into, like, switch buckets with the other girl or something. And then when the police found out that this family wasn't starving to death, they investigated. They found this other rich girl was doing the trick of sharing her food with her. And they, what did they do? They put her on the roof and coated her with honey and let the all the bees and the bugs eat her till she dies. Died. Okay, not a pleasant story. But you don't remember that one? Okay, maybe in some kindergartens they're like more sensitive and they don't teach these stories. But fine, we know, where did Chazal get these from? I don't mean the stories, I mean the idea. How did Chazal know? So here is a little secret I'll tell you. I already told you. I'll just chazar the secret. Half the time you have a medrash and you don't know where Chazal got something from in a medrash. Like, you have no idea. Like, where did Chazal get this idea? Fine. So like I said, we're all Orthodox Jews. If it says so in the Medrash, we believe Chazal just because that's what it means to be Maminim, B'nei Maminim. Right? I'm not an Apikoros. If Chazal say it, that's good enough for me. But I'm still curious to know where they got it from. So half the time, they got it from the... Exactly, the most important Perish. The only Perish on Chumash that came before Chazal, which is Tanakh. Half the time Chazal say a strange Medrash, it's a Mefurish Pasuk somewhere in the Tanakh. This one, number four, is a Mefurish Pasuk in Yechezkel. The only difference is that Chazal, before they wrote Midrashim, learned all of Tanakh. Nowadays, you go to yeshivas, before they read Midrashim, they don't even learn all of Tanakh. But Chazal, before they wrote any Midrash, of course you have to know Tanakh, right? It says in Pirkei Avos, Bin Chamish LeMikra. Between 5 and 10, all you learn is Mikra. And in those days, they didn't have recess. So everyone learned all of Tanakh. What does it say in number four? He Nezeh Yavon Stom Achoteich. Here the Navi is criticizing Am Yisrael. He says, this was exactly the sin of your sister Stone. That's obviously an insult. I mean, it's a Musar. You're acting like Stone. Gaon Sav'at Lechem. She was pride and full of bread, meaning they had a lot of money. V'shalvat Hashkeit. And they were quiet and calm, meaning they were great. They had a good economy, and they had a good political situation, right? There were no enemies attacking them. Shalvat Hashkeit. They had lots of money. Gaon Sav'at Lechem. Gaon here means not big Torah scholar. That's a more modern meaning. Gaon means pride. They were prideful, like Balgaiva. Haya Lovelamata were to Sodom and her suburbs, right? Remember the four suburbs? Viyada Nivevyon Lo Hechzika. And she, the Sodomites, did not support the poor and the unfortunate, right? They didn't support poor people. It's a Mefurish Pasuk in Yechezkel. Where did Chazal get these ideas from? I mean, it's good to have a moon in Chazal. But it's also good to remember that 99% of the time, Chazal had a very, very, very strong reason for saying what they said, and it might just be that we didn't read enough to come across their reason. And like many, many Midrashim that Chazal say that seem like they're made up from scratch, it's a Mefurish Pasuk someplace. We just forgot that we didn't get to that Pasuk. It says right here, that was the sin of Sodom. Right? We know all over in Pirkei Avos, what's Midas Sodom? What does Midas Sodom mean? Anyone ever read Pirkei Avos? Wasn't it this week's even? Midat Sodom is someone who says, Shalish. What?
It's like
right. Like Shalish, Shalish, Shalach, Shalach. I'll keep mine, you keep yours. I'll keep my money, you keep your money. Right? You don't steal. Right? No, we don't steal. We're upright citizens. I keep all my money and I don't share it with you. That's Midat Sodom. In Halacha, there's actually a din called Midat Sodom. The din called Midat Sodom in Halacha means if you could do someone a favor and it wouldn't cost you anything, and you don't do it, that's Midat Sodom. If like it's easy to help someone and you don't, not like it's a big sacrifice, then you're a tzaddik if you sacrifice a lot to help others. But if you could ease, like if you're, okay, no one here, I'm sure some of us drive back in America, but in Israel, if you drive in Israel, there are always people trying to catch tramps, right? So let's say I'm driving past, they call it the trampiata. Right now, I assume under the rules of our seminary, You're not familiar with the words tremp or trempiada, but it's like words that the Israelis use. It's a place where you catch, where you hitchhike rides. And so no one from this seminary should ever hitchhike. Right, is that the policy? No one from the seminary should ever hitchhike. It's a very foolish and dangerous thing for 18-year-old girls to do. But when you become a 41-year-old man, then you will be allowed to hitchhike as much as you want. I have trumps at the trempiada. So that's why I get home from work every day. The some of you may have met my wife. She owns our car. So I tramp. So you pass by the trempiada, and there's someone there at the trempiada, and it would be no big deal for you to bring them into your car, right? They don't look dangerous. You're not afraid of them. You don't think maybe they're an Arab. You're not like, they look like a nice person. And like, you're just going, you have to stop for a second. If you don't pick up the trempist, that's called midat sdom, and we pass in kofin al midat sdom. Halacha says we force you that you're not allowed to do midat sdom. If you can help someone, you have to help them. You can't be selfish. Okay, how much you have to go out of your way, that's more complicated. But if you can easily help someone, you can't be selfish. That's midat sdom. Midat sdom is not caring about other people. That's what it says here. It wasn't they were poor people. It's not like during the Holocaust, in the ghetto, someone had one piece of bread and they shared it with someone else. That's a tzaddik, right? And if they would kept all their bread, they would still be a good person, right? Here we're talking about they had more money than they knew what to do with. They just didn't help other people. They didn't care about other people. They were like, not one of us, not from my clique, not from my social class, not, an outsider. I don't want them hanging around here. So they ended up with midat sdom. Ultimately, now we know, of course, that, right, whose children ended up living in Yerushalayim from Bereishit Perek Yudalit? Right? Whose children ended up in Yerushalayim? Anyone? Avraham's, right? Us, right? We live here, Yerushalayim, Avraham's children. Right, Avraham, of course, was the opposite of stone. What was Avraham famous for? Hachnas Arachim. Avraham fit in with Malkit Tzedek, famous Hachnas Arachim, is the opposite of Midat Sdom. Now let's just take a little fascinating tangent. If ultimately what, and I don't, Rabbi Goldsmith, don't go around telling people that I'm an apikoros or something, or that I'm, a liberal or anything. But very, very often, we're gonna come back to deepen this theme, we think of like Judaism, Yerushalayim, Avraham Avinu, what does that stand for? The Akedah, right? Bein Adam LaMakom, right? Mesiras Nefesh for Frumkeit and being Makbid, etc., which is all true, but that's only half the story, right? There's something called Tzedek, Hachnas Arachim. Hachnas Arachim doesn't mean, I hate to disappoint anyone, some things you learn in kindergarten are not true. Right? You ever notice that? Some things you learn in kindergarten aren't true. You want me to prove it? What was the relationship between Esther and Mordechai? He was her? He was her uncle, right? Not the Medrash, he was her uncle, right? How do we know? Because it says so in the Megillah. Okay, you're all wrong. It says explicitly in the Megillah he was her cousin. Right? So, it says explicitly he was her cousin. Vahi omenet hadasahi Esther bat dodo. Esther was the daughter of his uncle. Daughter of your uncle, they were cousins. Why did we all learn in kindergarten he was her uncle? Well, because the kindergarten teacher had to draw Mordechai, and Mordechai had to have a long white beard. And the kindergarten teacher had to draw Esther, and Esther had to be a young maiden. And if he had a long white beard and she was a young maiden, they probably weren't cousins. He was probably her uncle. Now, does anyone say Mordechai was old? No, maybe he was a young, accomplished person. Does anyone say Esther was young? No, maybe she's an older, beautiful woman. Does anyone say a young person and an old person can't be cousins? No, just, what is this, proof? Nothing at all spiritually productive, just that you shouldn't believe everything you learn in kindergarten. You should have a healthy skepticism. So another thing you shouldn't believe that you learn in kindergarten is Hachnasas Orchim. You should believe Hachnasas. Hachnasas Orchim doesn't mean inviting your friend to play with you on Shabbos afternoon. It doesn't even mean inviting your friend to come eat lunch with your family on Shabbos. That's not Hachnasas Orchim. That's called V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, that's Avas Yisrael. And that's a wonderful thing to have Avas Yisrael. It's great for Jews to be friendly and get along. And it's good to have friends, it's psychologically healthy. If you never invite any friends to your house, then, I don't know, that's weird. but that's not Hachnasas Orchim. Hachnasas Orchim doesn't mean inviting your friend over. your friend has a perfectly good house. Hachnasas Orchim means, literally, Orchim, and Orach is a road, travelers. Right, this is the old days, before they had credit cards to pay at hotels, before they had cell phones, before they had anything, a traveler was stuck. It means someone who doesn't have anywhere to stay, you invite them into your house. It means someone who doesn't have any food, you invite them into your house. That's what Hachnasas Orchim means. Like, maybe Hachnasas Orchim would mean, let's say there's a, you know, I mean, we're all out of school already. Let's say there's a girl in your class back in school who, I don't know, she has a dysfunctional family and she doesn't have Shabbos meals at home and she has a very difficult situation and she has no friends, and you invite her over for a Shabbos meal. So that's Hachnasas Orchim. That's someone who doesn't have any place else to eat. So some reason out of kindergarten we thought that, like, hanging out with our friends in our clique is Hachnasas Orchim, but of course we're not going to invite over, like, people who we don't know or strangers or people who, like, you know, go to the wrong shul or the wrong school or are weird. But that's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah Hachnasas Orchim means to sort of open yourself and invite in people who are really needy, right? Who are really a little different than you because you have and they don't. That's Hachnasas Orchim. That's what Avraham Avinu did. And that's what Stone didn't. Now here's a little question. Who was on the borderline in the story between Avraham Avinu and Stone? Which person was on the border? Lot. Lot, on the one hand, well, what was his connection to Sodom, obviously? He lived there, right? And he chose to live there. On the other hand, well, not just he was Avram's nephew, but what did he do in Sodom? When the Malachim came, who he didn't know were Malachim, he invited the Malachim to Orchim, even at great personal risk, right, with Mesirat Nefesh. So Lot was, is Lot, who does Lot belong with? Does he belong with Sodom? Or does he belong with Avraham? Okay, so Lot proved himself, right? When the Malachim came, who did he prove he belonged with? Was he with Tzedek or with Sodom? He was with Avraham, with Tzedek. The only tricky part is this. Lot decided to live in Sodom. For what reason? Maybe we'll explain in a moment. The tricky part is this. He stayed with Avraham. Why? Because he learned from Avraham. But the problem is, what happens when you live in Sodom? Even if you remember Avraham's message, how about bringing up your kids, right? What happened to his kids? What happened to his daughters? Forget the parts that I won't repeat in mixed company, right? We're not going to discuss that because it's not appropriate here. Just the appropriate parts we're going to stick with. His daughters, what did his daughters think? They thought they were the last people left in the world. Let me ask you a simple question. If I told you there was a town where no one gave tzedakah and they let poor people die of hunger, and they were mean to anyone who was a stranger, and they didn't care about other human beings, and it got destroyed, would you think there was no one else left in the world? You would think the good people are still left in the world, right? Why did Lot's daughters think there was no one else left in the world? So I think the answer, I think the answer is Pashut, because they didn't realize there was anything wrong with stone. They thought that was normal. They thought it was normal. They thought everyone was like stone. They didn't realize that stone was evil. If they thought that was normal, then if stone was destroyed, everyone must have been destroyed. They didn't hop. They were taken in by stone. How do we prove that ultimately which nations came from Lot's daughters? Ammon and Moab. What's the din of Ammon and Moab halachically? Why not? Number 5, Lo Yava Ammoni Moavi Bekal Hashem, Gam Dor Asirilo Yavo Lohem Bekal Hashem Olam. Ammon and Moab can't join our nation. Even the 10th generation can't join our nation. Why? Al Devar Asher Lo Kidmu Etchem Balechem Vamayim Baderach Zeitchem Mimitzrayim. Basher, etc. Because when the Jews left Mitzrayim, they weren't Malki Tzedek. They didn't, when the Jews left Mitzrayim, they passed through Ammon and Moab. Ammon and Moab didn't offer them food and drink when they were weary on the road walking from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. Ammon and Moab didn't do Hachnasas Orchim. Ultimately, what kicked Ammon and Moab out of Klal Yisrael? Because they had the choice. Were they following their great-great-uncle Avram, or were they following the way they were brought up in Sodom? What values would be passed on through their generations to build their societies with? They built their society in the values of Sodom. You basically see in this pasuk that Lot's daughters never left Sodom. They physically left Sodom, but they never hashkafically left Sodom, and therefore there's no room in Am Hashem for people who don't believe in Tzedek, for people who have Midat Sodom. The pasuk in Yeshaya actually tie in a very interesting angle, which we'll come back to Yom Yerushalayim. This is, anyone know when we read this Haftorah? I didn't start from the beginning. If I'd start from the beginning, it might have been easier. The first word is Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amoz. We read on Shabbat Chazon, which is before Tishuav. It's about why there was a Churban of Beit HaMikdash. Right? Basically, what is Yom Yerushalayim? Yom Yerushalayim, if 23 days ago was Atchalta de Geula, right? Then Yom Yerushalayim is what comes after the Hatchala. Is the second step of Geula, right? It's a little more than the Atchalta. After all, Yerushalayim is one step towards Mashiach, towards the Beit HaMikdash. How do we get there? Lulei Hashem Tzvakoto Tir Lanusirid Kim'at Kisdoma Yinu L'Amara Daminu. The Navi says, if not for Hashem's rachman, and he left us a little remnant, we would have been destroyed like Sodom and Amorah. Says Shu'ud V'Hashem Ktsinei Sodom. What does he accuse the Jews of being? Ktsinei Sodom. Officers of Sodom. Hazina Torat Eloheinu Am Amorah. The people of Sodom and Amorah. He says, you're acting like Sodom and Amorah. You're the Jewish people. You're supposed to act like Avraham Avinu. And why is Shiro giving them Musar? Because they're acting like Sodom and Amorah. And then he says, Chaval, Eicha, Eicha, Ital Lezona, Kirya Nemana. Right, how did a Kirya Nemana, place of faithfulness, turn into a Zona? In what way? He's not talking about Gilei Arayot here. He's not talking about promiscuity. Meleati Mishpat. Yerushalayim used to be filled with justice. Tzedek Yolinba. It was the place, even the Goyim were Adoni Tzedek and Malki Tzedek. It was a place of what they call nowadays social justice. I know social justice sounds like reform, but it shouldn't. Right? It was a place where there was tzedek, where they took care of everyone in society, where they cared about other people. V'atamratzchim, and now they're murderers. Kaspecha yalasigim, sabeich mobamayim. Now they cheat people, they dilute the silver and the wine. Sarayach sorim v'chavrei ganavim, and the leaders are thieves. Kulohev shochad, they just take bribes. Rodev shalmonim, yatom lo yishpot v'rim l'nayiv olehem. They don't care about the widows and the orphans, right? They just take bribes instead of caring about the most vulnerable people in society. Lachain, Chavdal, Nu'um Adon Hashem Tzvakot Ever Yisrael. So, what's the end, right? Haftorah, it's halacha, always has to end with something positive. This is where we change the trop in Shul. Listen, before Tisha B'Av, to the normal trop again, instead of the Icha trop. Hashem says, Avir Yisrael, the might of Israel, I will finally take comfort, I will take revenge on my enemies, meaning I'll redeem the Jews. Hashem will take us and purify us, and take out all of the dross, that means the impurities. He'll give us back proper leaders. What means Geula? Hashem will make us an Ir HaTzedek, a place of faithfulness. What does Geula mean? Geula means when we become a place of tzedek. Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh v'shaveh b'tzedakah. How will Tzion tipadeh? How will Yerushalayim be redeemed? Shaveha. Shaveha means the captives. How will the captive Jews who are in Golos all over the world be brought back to Yerushalayim? B'mishpat u'v'tzedakah. Ultimately, Hashem says, what does Mashiach mean? Mashiach means that if we go back to tzedek u'mishpat, if we care more about sharing with others, about opening our hearts, then Yerushalayim will be redeemed. I once remember asking Rav Lichtenstein about this. Fascinating question. Rav Lichtenstein, you've heard of Rav Lichtenstein? Right? It's actually his birthday today. Did you know that? Yeah. Yerushalayim was his birthday present. Yerushalayim was his 34th birthday present. So I'm not going to say how old he is. But was his 34th birthday present. Actually, I can say how old he is. They're having a big party for him in 2 days in Alon Shvat. Right? Everyone knows enough math? Okay, good. Someone once asked him, what do you think about those groups, the Temple Mount Faithful? Temple Mount Faithful, the people who always try to sneak in bombs to blow up the Dome of the Rock so they can rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Now, obviously on one level, like the simple answer, like if it had been me, not Rav Lichtenstein, I would have answered on the surface level. I would have said, what do I think of them? I think they're a bunch of lunatics because, like, it's just going to backfire and they'll get arrested and they'll kill the, Chas V'Shalom, like, maybe the terrorists will kill Jews. And, it's not a good tactic, given what the police think and what the government thinks, etc. Right? So Rav Lichtenstein, he also knows that, but he answered on a deeper level. He said, I'm for the Temple Mount Faithful. I want to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. But, he said, the question is, how do you rebuild the Beis HaMikdash? So he said, one way to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash is, let's blow up the Dome of the Rock and start putting stones down. He says, that's not right. He says, for example, we used to have a Beis HaMikdash, right? Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni. When we had a Beis HaMikdash, what did the Nevi'im say? Anyone ever read Yeshaya or Yirmiyah? What did the Nevi'im say? They said, you guys are so evil that the Beis HaMikdash deserves to be destroyed. And it was destroyed. We had a base on Mikdash, but because we didn't treat each other properly, it was destroyed. So Rav Lichtenstein said, let's imagine we built the base on Mikdash today. And there was a Navi. What would the Navi say? He would say, look at your society. You know, so many people aren't keeping Shabbos, and so many people aren't getting a Jewish education, and there's homeless people all over the street, and what do you do when you walk by the homeless person? Now again, I'm not saying that every 18-year-old girl should strike up a conversation with a homeless person. Obviously, we have to have common sense in our heads. But what does society do, right? We ignore them. We pretend they're not there. We don't look at them, right? What do, right? We, instead of actually caring and saying, you know, opening our hearts, what can we do? What do with our money? Well, we spend it on a lot of unimportant things, and we don't give terribly much of it to tzedakah. What do when we elect people to the Knesset? We say, well, what kind of people will sort of lower my taxes and give less money to poor people? So Rav Lichtenstein said, hold on, if Yeshaya was alive today, he would say, and there was a base of measures, he would say, you guys deserve to have it destroyed if you don't fix yourselves. So he said, what's the point? What, are we going to build a base of Mikdash that deserves to be destroyed? We have to fix ourselves. To build bring Geula, we have to fix ourselves, so we deserve a base of Mikdash. And he added in, you know what? If we make ourselves deserve a base of Mikdash, then you don't need the Temple Mount faithful. Then Hashem knows how to take care of the Dome of the Rock if he wants to, right? It's not a problem for him. It's not beyond his capabilities. We have to make ourselves worthy of Beis HaMikdash. And that's, I think, part of the message of, so far has been the introduction to my shiur. The message of this introduction, I think, is that Yushalayim, we're about steps to Geula. This is the month of steps to Geula. Question is, how do we take those steps to Geula? And we'll deepen it in a moment when we get to the actual shiur. But I think part of the answer is clearly that Yerushalayim is not just about sovereignty. It's not just about an army conquering. And it's not just about a Beis HaMikdash of building of sticks and stones. Yerushalayim is about us living up to Yerushalayim. And this is an interesting question someone asked me the other day. He says, you know, I envy those people who lived before 48. They could fight for the state. I envy the people who have stories about 67, right, about conquering Yerushalayim. Now it's all there. Now what am I supposed to do? Like, I can't be a hero. Like, there's nothing left to do. Like, it's all there. So the answer is, okay, maybe in Chitzoniyot, in Gashmiyot. First of all, we need to do a little work there in conquering Yerushalayim a little better. But still, that's not something I could do. You know, that's up to the government, because the government's too right, too left, whatever it is. And, you know, but what every person can do is to make Am Yisrael more deserving of Yerushalayim, to make Am Yisrael more deserving of the Geula. Right? If we really believe Tziyom Mishpat Tiva Devash Avev Tzedakah, how do I make myself better, make Am Yisrael, when I think of how I'm going to lead my life, what my priorities are going to be, right? How I'm going to bring up my kids, how I'm going to relate to other people in Klal Yisrael, right? How do I make us worthy of Yerushalayim? But now I want to just deepen it one drop more with a simple question. Who can answer this simple question? Who here goes to Menachem Leibtag Shir? Okay, you might be able to answer this simple question then. Why was Stone so evil in their being Adam L'Chaviro? Why was Stone so selfish? Why didn't they care about poor people? Why? Just Stam it worked out that way? Or was there a reason?
They only had Mishpat and not
Tzedakah. Okay, but I'll ask why. Now, this is a, I think especially in this month, right? The month of Zionism, religious Zionism, right? One of the great things about being in Eretz Yisrael, and I'm sure you had a chance to appreciate that sometimes, I was in the Knesset the other day. I was in the Knesset last week, hanging out. I wasn't really hanging out, I was sort of sitting at a table and, you know, with other people who were hanging out, with some Chavri Knesset, and one of them was Amram Mitzna. Okay, you heard of Amram Mitzna? Amram Mitzna is, he doesn't wear a yarmulke. He's not from the very firm people. He's not from the right wingers. He used to be the head of the Labor Party, was almost prime minister once. He is a leftist Israeli politician. Not the biggest leftist in the world, but he is clearly a leftist Israeli politician. And what did he say? We're having a little ceremony in honor of the kid from Passaic, the MTA kid from Passaic, who won the Chidon HaTanach. I'm sure you've heard of that. So he was talking about how important Tanakh is, how his wife's a Tanakh teacher, and her goal in life is that if she teaches in a secular school, that every Jewish kid in Israel should love the Tanakh, which is very beautiful to hear. And he said, you know what Eretz Yisrael is all about? Medinat Yisrael means that you walk around the country with a tour guidebook, and the best guidebook to the country is the Tanakh. That's what he said, that's Eretz Yisrael. And I'm sure you've been on plenty of Tehillim, Tanakh Tehillim, and it goes two ways. To understand the country, we bring our Tanakh. To understand Tanakh, we have to know a little bit about the country. So let's learn a little bit about the country. Number 7. The Gam Lulot, and also let's save Avram from a false accusation. Okay? Everyone ready to save Avram from a false accusation? You ready? Okay. The Gam Lulot ha'olech l'Avram ha'yat son of Akar ba'olim. Lot was with Avram. He had lots of money. What did money mean in those days? It meant sheep and cows and tents. The Lot asal tam ha'aretz l'shevet yachdav. Ki ha'aruch Hashem rav lo'yich l'shevet yachdav. Right, they were, the land could not support both of them together because they had too much property and they couldn't live together. There was a fight between Avram's shepherds and Lot's shepherds. The Canaanim and the Prizim were then in the land. Avram says to Lot, let's not fight the two of us. Let's not have our shepherds fight. Because we're close relatives. The whole land is in front of you. Let's separate. Someone translate to English.
If you go left, I'll go right.
Okay, you all mistranslated perfectly. Excellent. If you go left, I'll go right. If you go right, I will go left. Okay. Well, how do I know you mistranslated? We'll see in a moment. Vayisalot esenav, vayaris kol kikari. Lot lifted up his eyes and saw the whole plains of the Yarden River. Where's Dome? Where's Dome now? Like, what do we call that part of Israel? Where was Dome? Anyone? Geography?
In the Arava.
Lobdiyot, what we call nowadays, Yam HaMelech, right? Except that it wasn't salty then. Maybe it only got salty because of stone, right? Because of the story of stone, right? Gofrit v'melech suifach alertzah, when the salt rained down from heaven. But it was the plains, it was the end of, what is the Yam HaMelech, the end of which river?
Yardish.
Of the Jordan, that's where the Jordan ends. You can imagine, there was no salt then. Where a river ends, what is there going to be a lot of?
Civilization,
because there's going to be a lot of? Water, right? The river ends there. Where does all the water go? So that means there's lots of water. So what do you say? Ki chulam mashke, it was all well irrigated. Lifnei shachet Hashem et Sodom v'Amorah. This is before Hashem destroyed Sodom and Amorah. It was kigan Hashem, it was like Gan Eden. To Eretz Mitzrayim, it was like Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is very well irrigated, right? You know there's like a delta of the Nile River, like the Nile River goes in northern upper Egypt, Mitzrayim, it has like, it spreads out all over and it floods the land. There's tons of water. Right? Bochatzor, all the way to Tzor. Vayivchalolot eit kol kikari demas el ukedim. Lot chose the whole plains of the Yarden River to live in, and he went eastwards. Vayipardu Ishmael Chiv, and they separated from each other. Avram Yashav, right? Everyone knows. Stom, Avram lived in Chevron. From Chevron, which way to the Yam HaMelech? Eastwards, right? Mikedim. Avram Yashav Eretz Canaan. Avram lived in Eretz Canaan. Vilot Yashav Eretz Kikar. Lot lived in the cities of the plains by the bottom of the Jordan River by Halad Stom, and he cast his tent to Stom. Dan Shei Sodom Ra'im Mechata'im La'Shem Ha'od. The people in Stom were very evil and sinned to Hashem. Basically, Lot went to Stom. Right? Now, imagine what Avram Avinu is saying here. Right? Imagine, like, I don't get along so well with my relative. Even a nephew, right? It doesn't have to be my kid. A nephew. Although Avram didn't have any kids, so nephew is pretty important. I live with my nephew. He's my only relative. We have a little bit of a sechsuch over grass. So what do I say to him? Well, let's separate, like you go someplace, like you go one place, I go the other place, and he looks and says, oh, I can go right there to Sin City, go off the derech, right? So basically, what is Avram telling Lot? Avram's telling Lot, why don't we separate, you go off the derech, go to Stone. You know, bring up your kids in Stone. Is that something Avram Avinu should be saying?
No.
Should Avram Avinu be suggesting to Stone, even though he didn't tell him where to go? But you just had to pick up your eyes and you saw the best place, right? What's the best place? The best place is Stone. So what is Avram's an idiot? He doesn't know what he's saying. Why would Avram want Lot to go off the derech? Just because they have a little fight over grass. So what's the answer? The answer is that we all mistranslated, right? Let me ask you a question. How far did Avram chase the four kings? Who knows Chumash about that? Okay, good. You're all very makbid on Dvarim Shebechtav, Iyata Rashai, Lomran Balpeh, that you shouldn't learn Torah Shebechtav Balpeh. That's a good chumrah. Where did he chase the four kings? Vayir defame ad chova asher mismol ledamasek. He chased them till chova, which is small of Damascus. Right? You know Damascus. Capital of Syria. What do you mean it's to the small of Damascus? It's left of Damascus? Like, which way is it left of Damascus? You know, it's left of Damascus to me, or left of Damascus to Iraq, or left of Damascus to France? What does small mean? Anyone know anything about biblical directions? Where is front? Kedem. Which way is front? East. Which way is back?
West.
Which way is right? Now you have to think of your compass in your head. Which way is right?
South.
If I'm facing east, right is south, and north, and left is north. Small in Lashon Mikra. In the Chumash, small means north. The onkelos on this pasuk is not if you go east, I'll go west. Is if you go north, I'll go south. If you go south, I'll go north. Small means north in Tanakh. And Yemen, where's Teiman? Teiman is in the
south,
right? Yemen is all the way in the south of the Arabian Peninsula, of the known world. All right, they didn't know about South Africa then. So, what did Avram say to Lot? He didn't say you go left, I'll go right, you go right, you go. He said, you go north, I'll go south. You go south, I'll go north. Now, south and north, right? Meaning, where would he go? South and north means for like Harei Chevron, you know, maybe Beersheba a little to the south. The north would be, I guess, to Yerushalayim, maybe Beit El or someplace, Kochav HaShachar, who knows? What did Avram, where did Avram not offer Lot the option to go?
East or west.
East or west. He says, no, don't go east or west. You go north, I'll go south. You have to know what the words mean. Unculus actually says that. Im at letzipuna v'ana ledrona, im at ledrona v'ana letzipuna. Right? He says go north or south. North or south are like the hills of Yehuda and the Shomron, right? The sort of hilly area in the middle of the country. You know the country? It's like flat near Jordan and flat near the Mediterranean, then goes up to a hill. I would draw it for you, but I'm terrible at drawing, and you would just understand it less. What does Avram say to Lot? He says go north or go south. Stay on the hills in the middle of the country. And what did Lot decide on his own without Avram's suggestion? Vayisol mikedem, he decided to go east. Avram never suggested to Lot to go to stone. Why would Avram want his nephew to go to an evil place and go off the derech? Avram said, stay in the mountains in the middle of the country. Lot decided to go to an evil place called stone on his own. Now, okay, we've saved Avram from the accusation. Everyone who mistranslated the pasuk and thought that Avram wanted his nephew to go off the derech realizes that Avram never had this havamid and never thought this would happen. He was surprised, taken aback, when Lot decided to go to stone. But what's the big difference about north and south versus east and west? Like, why does that really make a difference? Like, we get the geography, right? Where you start in, you start right here. You go north and south, you're in mountains in the middle of the country. You go east and west, and you go to the low line to the Mediterranean Sea, and even lower than sea level nowadays, to the to the Bik'ah, and the Arava, and the Yamamelach, to the border with Jordan, which is low.
Isn't the difference in like agriculture, what you're going to be able to grow
where? There's certainly a difference what you're going to be able to grow where, but even more importantly, what is there in the low-lying places, especially east? If you go to the west, you're near the Mediterranean Sea. What is the water like in the Mediterranean Sea?
Salty.
Salty, which is not good for agriculture, right? You can't water plants with salty water, they'll die. Right? You can't drink it, you'll die. Right? So it's useful for commerce. Right? But they still have enough water for agriculture because rivers always go into the sea. How do we know rivers go into the sea? Because it says in Kohelet, Kol HaNachalim Holchem El Hayam. Or, if you're a little more open-minded, because they actually do. So rivers go into the sea. So there's lots of rivers. You go to Tel Aviv, there's rivers going through, right? There's a nice park in Tel Aviv by the river. There's lots of water. You go to the Yarden River. Don't imagine the Yarden River nowadays. Anyone been to the Yarden recently? Like, it's barely anything. But that's because in modern times, we just built a big water plant at the top of the Yarden River and took all the water and put it into our faucets. But in the old days, the Yarden River was a tremendous river. How do we know it was a tremendous river? From which book of Tanakh?
Yoshua.
In Yoshua, it was a miracle that Hashem split the Jordan River like the Yam Suf, and they walked through. And it was such a miracle that all the Canaan talked about it. It was a big river. Of course there's tons of water. In the mountains, what is there not?
Water.
Right? There's not tons of water. Rivers don't flow to mountains. Rivers flow down from the mountains, right? Any water that lands goes down. If you live in the mountains, you have less water, says the Pasuk. As a matter of fact, what's the only way to get water in the mountains? Right? To collect it from?
Rainwater,
right? Meaning it doesn't flow to you naturally. Can you bring water like from the plains at the bottom up to your mountain?
No,
I mean you can bring one bucket in like a whole day, but obviously it's not practical. And nowadays you can pump it electrically. Right, but in those days, so basically, in the mountains, the only way to get water was rain. You needed rain. down by stone, rain was not so crucial. Says the pasuk in 8. Anyone remember what stone was compared to? Kigan Hashem ke Eretz Mitzrayim. Number 8. What's Eretz Mitzrayim? Ki ha'aretz. Who's with Menachem Leibtag here? Did he teach you these psukim of number 8?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. I knew he would. These are his favorite psukim. Ki ha'aretz asher atah v'shama l'rishta. I'm going to say the same thing, just emphasize a different angle. Ki ha'aretz asher atah v'shama l'rishta lo ke'aretz Mitzrayim hi asher yitzatem misham asher tizrat zarecha v'shkita v'ray l'cha kigan ha'yarak. Hashem tells us the land you're going into, Eretz Israel, is not like Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, what do? You plant your seeds and you water with your feet like a vegetable garden. It's a bit of machlokes about watering with your feet means the simplest shot is you carry the water with your feet. Meaning there's water, you just have to carry it. Like in Mitzrayim, how do you make a living? How do you get parnasa? You plant seeds and you bring water. You have to work hard, right? But in Israel, the land you're going to inherit, Eretz Harim of Ka'ot, where are you going? Where do the Jews live mostly? They live mostly on the mountains, in Hebron, in Beit El, in Yerushalayim. What they call nowadays the occupied West Bank. Right? But that's where our ancestors lived. We didn't live in Tel Aviv. Who lived in Tel Aviv during most of the time? Plishtim. Like, we theoretically could have lived in Tel Aviv. It was part of Shevet Dan. But the Plishtim usually lived in Tel Aviv because they were very powerful and they came on the boats. They had commerce on the boats. Right? We lived right where we are now, in Shalom for Women in Malcha. That's where our ancestors lived. Right in the Ella residence. The Eretz Harim Ka'ot, it's a mountainous area. Limtar Hashemayim Tishtamayim. How do we get water to drink, not to mention to plant? From rain. So Israel's better because you get rain. Are we sure it's better? What would you pick? I give you the choice. Here, I'll pick someone random. You're a random person. So I give you the choice. Two career paths. One I'll call Mitzrayim. Like, the seeds are there, the water's there, but you have to work hard and schlep to, like, get it to grow things, and then you get money. The other is, you just sit and it rains, and when it rains, you get money. Which would you pick? Right, I mean, it's not so bullshit. Like, you're dependent on the rain, right? Meaning, in Mitzrayim, it's like, I mean, I guess probably different people. Some people would say, I want to be an accountant and work in an office. Some people would say, I want to be an entrepreneur and make a high-tech startup and maybe lose all my money and maybe make money. Right? I'm a conservative kind of person. financially, I would probably take the job where, like, I'd have to work hard, but I know I'd get money and, like, I would have money to feed my family. Especially in the old days. You know, in the old days, if someone, like, didn't have money, like, nowadays, if someone doesn't have money, it's really hard for them. But in the old days, if someone doesn't have money, then their family had no food and they just starved to death. So, like, I'd be pretty scared. So, Israel is better. Why is Israel better? Israel's better because it comes from the rain. But hold on a second, not so pushit. Like, if it doesn't rain, I'm dead. In the old days, right, if there was a drought, people died. Like, that was it. Society was over. So, why is Israel better? So, luckily, there's one more pasuk left. Eretz asher Hashem lokech d'reisho ta, tamidei nei Hashem lokech b'amei shet ha'shana v'ad acharit. Shana. What does the pasuk say? And basically, I'm just saying over in English what the Rashbam says in number 9 and what Menachem Leibtag likes to say. He says, why is Israel better? It's not better economically, financially than Mitzrayim. Right? Maybe Mitzrayim's better. Right? It's Kigana Shemker Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is like Gan Eden. Why is Israel better? It's spiritually better. Because if you live in Mitzrayim, then, and you go to business, you work, you make money. Whose presence do you feel in your business?
No,
yours. You worked hard, right? If you live in Israel and everything comes from the rain, whose presence do you feel in your business?
God's,
right? Hashem's always watching. Hashem's watching everywhere. But in Israel, you feel Hashem watching. Even Ad Hayom Hazeh, you ever notice that people in Israel, it's always like everything's a little riskier, right? Right? People feel like Hashem a little more there. Like you realize that Hashem's in charge of everything. Now, of course, it's all foolish. Like, Hashem's in charge of everything. Like, no matter how solid your financial situation is, no matter how everything is planned out and you have everything you need and everything works out, of course you need Hashem. Nothing works without Hashem. Of course, there are people who go to Harvard Law and end up unemployed and end up homeless because Hashem did not give them siyata deshmaya. Everyone needs Hashem. But in Mitzrayim, you forget you need Hashem. In Eretz Canaan, you remember you need Hashem. What did Avram say to Lot? He said, not like the first way we translated it. You go north, I'll go south. You go south, I'll go north. Let's stay in the mountains. Avram Yashav Be'eretz Kanaan, the end of paragraph of Makor 7. Let's stay in Eretz Kanaan in the mountains. Let's stay someplace where we feel that we're dependent on Hashem. We remember that everything comes from Hashem. Right? Imagine I'm a farmer, I plant, I'm waiting for the rain. All I think of is Hashem, please make it rain. And then when it does, Hashem, thanks for the rain. Let's remember that Hashem's in charge of the world, that everything we have comes from Hashem. And where did Lot choose to go? Choose to go to Sodom, which was like Mitzrayim. Maybe Lot, he'd been in Mitzrayim, right? He liked Eretz Mitzrayim. Avram went to Eretz Mitzrayim. Avram hated it. He says, when can I get back to Israel? Lot liked Eretz Mitzrayim. He's like, why didn't we stay there longer? I would have liked to stay in Mitzrayim a little more. Nechama Leibowitz actually makes the diyuk. Vayal Avram Mitzrayim hu v'shto v'chol asher lo v'lot imo hanegba. When Avram left Mitzrayim, Lot was the last one to leave. Lot liked Mitzrayim. He says, I have a place like Mitzrayim. I'm sick of all this Hashem, Hashem, Hashem stuff. It's not that he was an atheist. Just, I'm sick of all the time davening to Hashem. I'm sick of thinking of Hashem all the time. Why can't I go someplace where I can take care of myself and not have to depend on Hashem all the time? That's why Lot went to Sodom. Now, of course, the last laugh was on him, because there's no such thing as not needing Hashem. So what happened in Sodom? They had plenty of water, they had plenty of money. So they got conquered in a war. Hashem sent 4 kings to conquer them. I mean, Hashem always has the last laugh. But this Sodom and Yerushalayim then, Sodom and Avram, Eretz Canaan, and Sodom / Eretz Mitzrayim are 2 different ways of living in the world, 2 different ways of looking at money. Mitzrayim means, anyone know what the phrase in Sefer Dvarim we're not supposed to say when we go to Israel is? Who's in Menachem Livtek here? Kochi? Ve'otzim yadiyas ulis chayel azeh. Hashem says, don't go to Israel and say, my own mind and talent made me my money. Remember that everything comes from Hashem. Mitzrayim is a place where if I have money, I pat myself on the back. It's my hard-earned money that I deserve. Yerushalayim, Eretz Canaan, Avram stands for a place where whatever I have, I'm thankful to Hashem for giving it to me. Now, let's just tie it up. I think this is a key in Judaism, which is a theme that I haven't found emphasized in the Mefarshim as much as perhaps it should be. What's the relationship between Binon L'Chaveru and Binon L'Makom? Right? Everyone knows that they're both important. Right? But it's not that they're both important. They're connected. Someone tell me very, very pashut. Now, based on what we learned, why in Sodom did they not care about poor people? And in Yerushalayim, they did tzedakah and did care about poor people in Orchim? Because what?
Raise your hand.
Okay. Exactly, meaning in Sodom, they're like, what, my money? It's my money. I deserve it. I worked hard. If someone else doesn't have money, then they obviously didn't work hard, right? What do they say? Buddy, get a job, right? If someone else doesn't have money, then they didn't work hard. I deserve my money. If I think everything comes from me, then why would I share it with other people? Like, I worked hard. I deserve it. If you want money, you go work hard. There are widows and orphans who don't necessarily have the opportunity to work, right? There are people who don't necessarily have that opportunity. I don't care, right? There are people who don't own any land, the strangers. How are they supposed to work if no one gives them, if no one helps them out? I don't care. The attitude of everything comes from me, of I get credit for everything I have, is the attitude that leads to me that stone. If I get credit, why should I share it with anyone else? Why is Yerushalayim the city of Malki Tzedek? Because in Israel, if we recognize that everything he has comes from Hashem, if we remember that I don't deserve anything, I got it through Siyata Deshmaya. I got it because Hashem gave it to me, right? Not like some people, like they're very into Emir Hashem, Baruch Hashem, etc., just saying it so that they can get a good shidduch. But if you really say it because you mean it, right? Oh, you know, Baruch Hashem, I got this great job that's working out. Not meaning I got a great job that's working out and give me good shit because I said Baruch Hashem. But it's really from Hashem because someone else could have gotten that job and I could have not gotten a job. But Hashem sent it my way and everything I have comes from Hashem. If everything you have comes from Hashem, then like, why should you hoard it for yourself? What Hashem made you, he didn't make other people. If everything you have comes from Hashem, then Hashem wants you to do tzedakah with it. Hashem wants you to care about other people. It's not my credit, it's my fortune. Hashem was nice to me. If Hashem was nice to me, I should be nice to other people. What I would like to claim then is very pashut, that all the parts of the shiur come together. Sodom, because of their geographical situation in Israel, because Sodom thought they made all their own money, they didn't share it with others, because we, Am Yisrael, Hayoshev B'Tzion, Malki Tzedek, going to Avram, going to us, Because we recognize that everything comes from Hashem. Someone who really believes everything comes from Hashem will automatically be a better person than Machaveiro. If everything comes from Hashem, then of course I should share it with all of Hashem's creatures. Of course I should share it with other people. It all comes from Hashem anyway. It's not my credit. It was just a gift from Hashem. So if Hashem was nice and gave me a gift, I shouldn't be nice to other people. Of course I should be nice to other people. I don't deserve this any more than they do. And you see this totally in regular life. You know, you see this when people grow up and they have to make decisions about priorities in life. Someone who really thinks that they deserve what they have is not going to give a lot of money to tzedakah. Say, what do you mean? I deserve what I have. I should use it for myself. I need it for myself. Everyone always needs everything. Right? Someone who really believes that everything is from Hashem will say, look, this is from Hashem. We all know what Chazal tell us. When Hashem gives you 10 bucks, he's giving you 9 for you and 1 as a pikadon, and 1 he's making a point, and you're making you a shliach to give to tzedakah, to give to people who are less fortunate. That's the kind of person who's going to share with other people. And I think there's one thing. Okay, there's another side of the page, I believe, but we're not going to get to that today. Don't worry, Rev. Goldsmith. We're not going to get to that today. But there's another side of that page. But ultimately, if Yerushalayim stands for something for us, we can appreciate having Yerushalayim. But what do we do? What's left to do? We can't conquer it anymore? The answer is, we can't conquer the physical Yerushalayim anymore, but it's our job to make Am Yisrael worthy of Yerushalayim, to be po de Yerushalayim, not with guns and with tanks, because someone already did that, right? To be po de Yerushalayim, b'mishpat tipada, v'shaveh b'tzedakah, and the way to that, the way to making a society with the right ben unla chaveiro, is to start with the right ben unla kom, is to remember where everything comes from. If we remember where everything comes from, then we'll be good people and know where everything's supposed to go to. If we forget where everything comes from, then we run the risk of turning into stone. And you know how the last laugh is on stone? The battle was not the last laugh. That was the penultimate laugh, because Avram saved them from the battle. What happened in the end to stone, who didn't need God? 10, Bashem himtir al stone bial amaraga fritva ish. What's the root word himtir? Matar, he rained down. He says, you don't need my rain? Right, ultimately, everyone is taught dependent on Hashem. He rained down on them, garfit va'esh, min Hashem and Hashemayim, and said, that's not what we stand for. We stand for the opposite of this. Okay, there's a lot more to say, but hopefully we have gained a little insight into Tanakh. We've remembered what the most important mefarish of the Chumash is, and we've thought a little about what the real priority should be for a Yerushalayimnik, for someone who internalizes the message of Yerushalayim and avoids Midat Sdom. Thank you very much, everyone, for participating so wonderfully.